Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Chelsea, and I love true crime.
And I'm David, and I love horror movies.
And this is Based on a True Crime.
Jennifer is the new girl in a strange school. She's taunted by her classmates, haunted by a deadly secret.
Is she insane? Well, she's not normal.
And caught up in a murderous wave of terror.
When the murderer hides his victims, he likes to keep in physical contact with them.
But Jennifer's got a few million close friends.
Insects never hurt me. I love all insects.
You're in a position to do extraordinary things.
And she's going to need every one of them. Creepers.
That fly is your magic wand. Ask him to lead you where the dead bodies are hidden, and he'll lead you.
From one of the most acclaimed masters of suspense comes the chilling tale of a young girl trapped in a web of evil. Dario Argento's Creepers. It will make your skin crawl.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our third minisode. Today, we are going to be discussing Phenomena, the 1985 Dario Argento film, not to be confused with Phenomenon, the 1996 John Travolta film, which I often confuse with Michael, which is also a 1996 John Travolta film. Yeah. No commonalities there, right?
Nope, no commonalities. Mm-hmm. They may sit next to each other at the video library or whatever.
Yeah. So this movie is about a girl with the power to communicate with insects, and she teams up with an entomologist to catch a serial killer. Although this movie is not about a true serial killer, as our normal episodes are, I've found that watching movies about serial killers, you know, you could see a lot of real life inspiration. So one of my all-time favorite movies is Silence of the Lambs. This is a movie that drew a lot of inspiration for its characters from real life. So Buffalo Bill is based on Ed Gein in terms of making fashionable clothing out of human flesh.
Ah, no. Yeah.
And also the way he feigned an injury to capture one of the girls is classic Ted Bundy.
Classic Ted.
So Jack Crawford is actually inspired by John Douglas, who is a real FBI agent that helped develop the behavioral research unit there. He actually wrote the book Mindhunter that David bought for me. Thank you, David. That they're also making into a Netflix series.
Yeah, in the fall, that's exciting. Yeah.
And then Hannibal Lecter is actually based on a true murderer, Dr. Dr. Alfredo Bali Trevino. So he murdered and mutilated his friend slash lover, and he's also suspected of killing a number of hitchhikers. But kind of the inspiration came from the fact that he was very intelligent and elegant, and he was released after 20 years in prison and went back to being a physician.
Oh man, so, wow, that's wild.
Yeah, that's why you should always Google your doctor. So for Phenomena, there aren't really any people to draw that inspiration from. But one thing that stood out to me was the fact that although these girls are being killed, most of their bodies are never found. There's just one head that's found. And that got me thinking about bodiless murder, or the no body, no murder English common law. So this law dates back to the 17th century, specifically the Campden Wonder case. So in 1661 in Gloucestershire, England, a family servant, his mother, and his brother were all hanged for killing their master after the servant, John Perry, had initially confessed to the crime before rescinding his confession. So you can probably guess what's going to happen next, right?
Yeah.
So 1 year later, the master returned, and he claimed that he had been kidnapped and sold into slavery in Turkey. So this was not an official law, but it was essentially a guideline for convictions for almost 300 years. One famous case that's, I guess, not quite bodiless murder, but the acid bath killer, John George Hay, he operated under the assumption of no body, no crime, essentially erroneously. So he thought that the Latin phrase corpus delicti meant that you couldn't be convicted of murder without there being a body. But that term legally means that a crime needs to be proved. It has nothing to do with an actual corpse.
Whoops.
Also, habeas corpus, nothing to do with a corpse either.
Right.
But as a result of, you know, his misinterpretation, although, you know, no body, no murder was really common law, he would dismember and dissolve his victims in sulfuric acid.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's
gross.
Awful.
So eventually he was caught because his last victim, he dissolved the victim in a place and he thought that there would be a floor drain to dump the body down, which, don't dump your sulfuric acid down the drain. That's like basic chemistry.
Yeah, that's well, I think they do that in like the first season of Breaking Bad. Do not do that.
I have notes on that, actually.
All right, awesome.
So instead of dumping the body more discreetly, he dumped it on top of a rubbish pile in his backyard. And then the police came and they found a foot, some gallstones, and some dentures. So
weird.
Not quite a bodiless crime. There were some bits and pieces. So he was convicted.
Literally.
Yeah. So, yes, Breaking Bad, this is a scene that really stood out to me in the first season. They were actually dissolving the body with hydrofluoric acid, which is not as strong as sulfuric acid. And I think it was kind of picked for the fact that they could do what they did. So, you know, he's supposed to put the body in the plastic tub and pour hydrofluoric acid into the tub because hydrofluoric acid can't dissolve plastic, but it actually can dissolve glass. So if you'll remember, he ended up putting the body in the bathtub instead because he didn't want to dismember him and put him in the tub.
Right.
And then it eats through the porcelain and then all falls through the floor. So I love that scene.
Yeah,
acid has been used to dissolve bodies for a number of years, I guess.
Hopefully it taught a lot of people. I mean, wait, maybe not taught them lessons on what to use to dispose of bodies. We hope that's not the lesson.
Yeah, these are not instructions.
No.
So eventually, the no body, no crime common law was abolished. So in 1953, Stanislaw Sykut was murdered by his business partner, Mikhail Onufrzyk. Sorry, the Polish names. Onufrzyk claimed that Sykut had returned to Poland, the pig farm that they shared, which had blood and bone fragments all over the kitchen. He said that they were from rabbits, but pretty much everyone knew that he had cut up his business partner and fed him to the pigs.
Oh.
So he was sentenced to death, but it was eventually commuted to life in prison. And this set a new precedent for these bodiless murders. So the chief justice at the time, Lord Goddard, said, quote, "It is equally clear that the fact of death, like any other fact, can be proved by circumstantial evidence. That is to say, evidence of facts which lead to one conclusion, provided that the jury are satisfied and are warned that it must lead to one conclusion only." So there are a couple other famous cases I just wanted to touch upon. In the United States, we had a similar case that became our precedent. So it was in 1955. It's actually pretty close to the same year. It was the murder of Evelyn Scott by her husband, Robert Leonard Ewing Scott. And this was the first case in the U.S. history of someone being convicted of murder solely based on circumstantial evidence. So Evelyn had a lot of wealth and then married Robert Scott and eventually disappeared. Her body was never found, but her dentures, eyeglasses, and personal items were found buried among ashes near an incinerator. So
how suspicious.
Yeah, I'll know when you buy an incinerator.
No.
Keep my guard up. They also found that her bank accounts were emptied and the safe deposit boxes, the envelopes in there were replaced by envelopes that were filled with sand. So a little bit suspicious. I don't think she kept her sand collection in a safe deposit box.
Yeah, probably not.
And then just some famous ones that you guys might have heard of. I bet you've heard of both of these. So,
all right, what do you got?
The wood chipper murder. The murder of Hel Crafts in 1986 by her husband, Richard Crafts. This was the first bodiless conviction in Connecticut, and it was the inspiration for...
Fargo.
Yeah. And the other case is Azaria Chamberlain.
All right.
In Australia.
Okay, what do you got? Okay.
Dingo Ate My Baby.
Sorry, I'm not going to do an accent. We have international listeners. I will not offend you guys.
So this is a mother. She was convicted of murder and spent 3 years in prison until they actually found baby clothes in the dingo lair and realized that the dingo did eat her baby.
Indeed, eat the baby. Yeah.
Which is sad.
I
feel like
sad.
It's become kind of a joke, but it's like heartbreaking. So anyway, that's all I have on bodiless murders. So let's talk a little bit about the bodiless murders taking place in the movie Phenomena.
Yeah, no, those are great. I like how we tied it together. So good stuff. That's a little gruesome, but
anything that's bodiless, it's like worse than if there was a body because your imagination just goes wild.
Yeah, it definitely does.
And it's also terrible for the families. You know, I think having the body does provide a lot of closure that is not possible without it. So, you know, I'm glad that we can now convict people of murder without bodies because sneaky people can hide them forever.
Yep, that's true. But no, that's good. Good stuff. So as Chelsea mentioned earlier, Phenomena is a 1985 film directed by Dario Argento, starring Jennifer Connelly in one of her earliest roles before Labyrinth.
She's so cute in this movie's little baby.
Yep, yeah, she does a great job. Her character is Jennifer Corvino. She's a young American who joins a Swiss boarding school, where she discovers that a serial killer is murdering young women. And after she has a bizarre sleepwalking encounter, where she witnesses one of the murders, she meets Professor John McGregor, who is played by Donald Pleasance, which you may recognize as Dr. Loomis in Halloween, who is a forensic entomologist. After discovering that Jennifer has a psychic connection to insects, they team up to find the serial killer.
Such a good premise.
Yeah, no, it's one that I wouldn't think of right off the bat.
I also have a soft spot for entomologists because of Gil Grissom in CSI.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Yep.
No, it's
AKA
cool.
Will Graham in Manhunter.
We also have a friend that's an entomologist and always has fascinating stories about what bugs do and the odd things that they're up to. So just a little bit of background behind Phenomena. If the name doesn't ring a bell, you may recognize the title Creepers, which was the New Line Cinema distributed version of Phenomena in the US. However, it's 20 minutes shorter than the theatrical cut, which we watched. We watched the 116-minute Italian theatrical cut from the Synapse Films Blu-ray, and there's also a 100-minute international cut included on the discs along with the 83-minute Creepers version, which the differences between the international and the Italian version are not that huge. However, the Creepers version is dramatically different in terms of order of scenes and just major scenes that are just completely excised from the movie. As we mentioned earlier, it's Jennifer Connelly as Jennifer Corvino. There's also Donald Pleasance playing Professor John McGregor. Another one of the major characters, which we'll talk about when we discuss the story in a little bit more detail, is Daria Nicolodi, who plays Frau Bruckner, and she also has a big part of the plot. So yeah, kind of a small cast of main characters with the headmistress of the school and then some of the girls that are attend school with Jennifer's character. But before we start talking about kind of our impressions of the movie, I just wanted to mention a little bit of trivia around the film.
Hope you're not asking me.
No quizzes here. There is a chimpanzee in the movie, which and Jennifer Connelly had part of her finger bitten off by said chimpanzee.
What?
during the filming of the final scene, and they had to rush her off to the hospital and reattach her finger.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, she doesn't bring it up in interviews that her Dario Argento directed chimpanzee co-star bit her finger off towards the end of the movie.
Oh my gosh.
Also, there's a lot of bugs in this movie. There was a lot of insect wrangling. However, there's some visual effects that were done with large amounts of swarming flies, and those visual effects were made by the very threatening coffee grounds in a water tank.
Terrifying.
Yeah, so scary. Yeah, so just some kind of fun stuff about the movie. The other thing I wanted just to point out was that Goblin did the soundtrack, which if you've seen other Italian horror movies, they've done some, you know, key work with Argento, including Suspiria. They also worked on the score for Dawn of the Dead, Tenebrae, which is another Argento one I think that we mentioned when we called out our friend Mike's favorite films of each decade a couple episodes ago. So yeah, I really enjoy Goblin scores. They're synth driven and a lot of fun. So it's Goblin. So I guess let's just kick it off. I know you mentioned that you kind of enjoy the movie, but just your impression overall, just to start our conversation about Phenomena.
So I did enjoy the movie. I enjoyed some parts more than others. I don't know how quickly you want to jump into like the turning point for me, but I will say, you know, you mentioned the score by Goblin. I was kind of shocked at first because I feel like I'm not really used to in horror movies them playing like entire metal songs with all of the words still in them.
Oh, right, because they had Motorhead and Iron Maiden had featured songs in there, so that, you know, it's kind of one of those. I think Argento must have been really happy to have those two bands contribute to the soundtrack. So
it did take me out of the film a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, I liked the instrumental music.
Well, okay, so I saw this film as Creepers back in the late 80s or whenever, probably after, just shortly after it came out, whenever it was on television. It was right around the time that Labyrinth came out, because this came out in 85 and Labyrinth came out in 86. So it was like, oh, Jennifer Connelly was in another movie before playing Sarah in Labyrinth. And, you know, she was a couple years younger than that. I was like, thought it was cool that she was in a horror movie, and remember enjoying it. And then I believe the first time that I saw the Italian cut was for our screening when we watched it for this episode. So that was a different experience, because I remember bits and pieces of the plot, but large amounts of it were new because they weren't included in the Creepers version. So it was cool watching this Italian version.
Yeah. Except when they randomly started speaking in Italian in that one scene.
Yeah, and that's because I couldn't find, I guess, the original English audio for the Blu-ray. But other than that, I thought the restoration work was really good. It looks great on Blu-ray.
It was definitely an enjoyable movie. It was, you know, not very scary. I don't know if it was necessarily effective as a thriller, but it was fun to watch. I think there were some missed opportunities. There's, you know, a cop that is, I guess, investigating the killing in parallel to Jennifer. I want to say like Jennifer's character. Oh, wait, her character is named Jennifer.
Yeah.
So investigate it in parallel with Jennifer. And they essentially arrive almost at the same time to the discovery of who the killer is. But they don't show anything about the cop.
Right.
They show like two little tiny scenes and that's it. And it's just, I guess, not what I'm used to with watching serial killer movies.
Yeah, and in those scenes, I remember being confused as to even who he was, or was he, I was like, is he the killer? Like, who is this guy?
Yeah, I thought he was the killer at first. Yeah.
It's Inspector Rudolph. No. He's not the bad guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that does, in terms of like a protagonist, I mean, obviously it's Jennifer's character, but I feel like had the inspector's role been much greater and more clear, that the hunt for the serial killer would have been that much better.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of a missing piece.
Yeah. The tone, I think, fluctuated a little bit. I had trouble figuring out how seriously I was meant to take the whole movie. I feel like that all got cleared up at the end. Just not very seriously.
Yeah. So, you were asking me about how quickly we wanted to dive into the part where it changed for you. I thought that'd be a good starting point to discuss the Friday the 13th portion of the movie, where it really quickly goes from sort of a giallo film to
discuss for a second what giallo is, because I know I'd asked you about that earlier and then I cut you off before you could tell me, and I said save it for the podcast. So we have seen quite a few Lucio Fulci movies together. And those are not giallo. Those are something else.
Italian horror. I mean,
just Italian horror.
Right. Yeah. The one component that, well, there's a couple of components that kind of make it a film, a giallo film. Mm-hmm. And that would be, it'd be an Italian thriller. Is, I don't know, we say, oh, these films of Dario Argento are Italian thrillers. But, you know, there's elements of mystery, slashers, crime fiction, psychological thrillers. There's not often all that much supernatural elements in giallos. So
this is about as supernatural as it gets in this film.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, you know, think of it as just like a thriller. But there are certain tropes of a giallo, and that often is like first-person shots of like a gloved killer with like a murder weapon, you know. Typically a lot of the times it's with knives or with strangling or very like
I can definitely picture those scenes in my head from this movie. Yeah.
Yep. So that's giallo. I don't know. I think there's people who know a lot more than who could probably go for days and days and days talking about it. But, you know, it's a film genre. Yeah. And it's tough to pronounce if you like just look at the word.
Yep.
Okay, so, but the Friday the 13th portions of it are a little different. Like, yeah. This is where I feel like Argento is tapping into that 80s American horror film, kind of like a Pamela Voorhees character.
Yes, very much.
Of Frau Bruckner. Mm-hmm. And the House of Horrors and the, like, so should we say, she has a son?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
So she has a son. I mean,
terrifying. Mutant son.
Yeah, and the son has this, it's called like Palo syndrome, which is a real syndrome, but I feel like they kind of exploit it as making him just like a little monster kid.
Yeah.
But the boy is similarly disfigured like Jason Voorhees is in Friday the 13th. And it's the mother like protecting him from, I guess, well, not spoilers, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to know, just keep listening.
If you don't want to know, I hope you had turned it off like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Yeah. So she's protecting the little boy because you think that the little boy is just happens to be disfigured at one moment, but no, he's a fierce little killer.
And this is a question I still have about the movie is how many of the people the little boy killed versus her. So the little boy killed most of them and she just killed to protect him when she had to.
Yeah, because the one of the early scenes is you just see someone chained to a wall and then the person breaks away from those chains and then chases the woman to her death in the waterfall, yeah. Right? And I'm assuming that is
the son.
Yeah, Frau Bruckner's son.
Yeah.
And then anything closer to home?
Yeah.
Is her or anything at the school is her. I don't know. It's kind of confusing.
It's just weird because, you know, at one point he was chained up in the house, I assume by her, to stop him from killing people. And then he's freed. He's living with her and she's just letting him kill all willy-nilly all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So if, you know, if any of you know more, just or have more clarity over this, let us know. Because I think just watching the film like we did, it's really difficult to know.
Yeah. But it's not to say it's not enjoyable to watch. Yep. That whole scene, oh my gosh. I mean, it was disgusting, but getting to the no body, no murder aspect, it turns out in her creepy murder house, all of the bodies are just like dissolving or decomposing in this big pit that she falls into.
Yeah, oh, a big messy pit that Jennifer falls into. And yeah, there's just parts floating everywhere.
Yep.
It's pretty gnarly.
Yep. So getting into, I guess, more of that Friday the 13th movie aspect. So after she escapes from the pit, she comes across the child who I feel like looks like he's like 6 or 7, which is just really weird also. But she approaches him thinking that he's just a sweet little child. And he turns around. He's got a monster face. He chases her with a... Is it a knife?
Yeah. I think it's like a... What is it? Yeah.
It's like a spear? Yeah. And she escapes into a lake. They fight in the lake. The lake catches on fire because why not?
Well, yeah. The engine gets... The motor gets punctured and then the gas comes out and then it...
There is not nearly enough gas to warrant the entire lake surface being on fire, which essentially it is. So... But
she also controls insects, so I think it's yeah. I'll accept that. She controls insects. A motor can contain like 50 gallon drum worth of gasoline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they get into the fight and then the whole
And it's one of those fights where it's you think he's dead, his body goes down, she swims to the surface, he pops back up. So very, very Jason-esque. And eventually it catches on fire and is gone. R.I.P.
Bye-bye. R.I.P. Yeah. She gets to shore. And then Pamela Voorhees, I mean, Frau Brückner. I feel like we should have the horse whinnying every time I say Frau Brückner. I feel like it's young Frankenstein here.
All right.
Okay, so at what point were you like checked out of this ending part though? There was the ending, right? When you were
at the point when she gets out of the lake, so she sees her father's kind of assistant there, and like I guess I was just the sucker who was like, okay, movie's over, I'm ready to like get into it, because you know I was not satisfied with a lot of aspects.
Oh, and then he
and
gets
then
his head cut
suddenly
off.
Yes. And then yeah, so Frau Brückner, don't do the horse or do the horse. She she cuts off his head.
Yeah. And it goes rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling.
Yep. And then she's, you know, Jennifer Connelly is essentially helpless at this point. She has no weapons. And then suddenly.
Oh, you go for it.
A chimpanzee with a straight razor flies in from the side and cuts her to death.
Yes.
Yes. The end.
The end.
Yeah.
And then I think I stood up and was like, yeah.
Yeah, I think I did too. It was just so ridiculous, but it really did kind of save the movie for me. But yeah, so there, I don't know why I thought the movie was over. There was a lot of foreshadowing for the return of the chimpanzee.
Yeah, there was, especially when like the first reveal of the chimp is, I think you asked me, you were like, is he the killer? Because he's like lurking in the shadows outside of Donald Pleasance's
and
character's house.
And he's carrying like a scalpel,
right,
that I guess he had found. And he brings the scalpel to Donald Pleasance. Yeah, something creepy about that chimp.
Yeah, I know. And I've always joked about like if a chimp got a hold of a knife, how frightening that would be. And sure enough, Dario Argento's like, let's give this trained animal some cutlery.
Yeah. And then what does he do? He bites off Jennifer Connelly's finger. Yeah.
But he didn't cut it off. So I guess that's...
Yeah. So wait, I don't even think we talked about where the chimp came from. So the chimp is helping Donald Pleasance. Donald Pleasance is paraplegic.
Yes.
And the chimp is kind of like his nurse. So it brings him things. He shoots a laser pointer at the thing and the chimp will go and get it and bring it back.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And at one point he points the laser pointer at the killer.
Yes, when the killer comes and...
And the chimp remembers. Oh, and rather than the chimp's name is Inga.
Yes.
I don't know. I like saying the chimp. I feel like if we used a laser pointer and pointed at something and trained our cats to go fetch it, like that'd be kind of fascinating, right?
None of our cats would do that.
No.
It's not because they're not smart. It's because they're too smart.
It's because they're cats, right?
Yeah, it's because they're cats, essentially.
Maybe we can teach Hildegard to do that.
Yeah.
Hildegard's our dog.
No. No, she's too lazy.
Yeah. No. The cats just try to retrieve the laser dot. I guess really, I feel like they established it.
They said very early on about her, when the laser is pointed at something, she'll never forget it. She'll always retrieve it.
Which should be like, I should be thinking the whole movie that like she's gonna come back and do that. But no, it really is out of the blue.
Yeah,
it's so bizarre.
Even though they show her getting the straight razor out of like a trash can or something, yeah. I don't know how it just slipped my mind. I think the end is so crazy that you just aren't thinking of Inga. But,
right.
But she came in. Inga saved Jennifer, also saved the movie to me, because I went from not enjoying it to very much enjoying it.
Well, and somehow we discussed all of this and didn't even get to the fact that Jennifer Connelly has a psychic connection with insects, which I mean...
Oh, oops.
So I think if we've sold you already on this film, there's like bugs that she can talk to. And actually it goes into the plot, because when she does team up, as we mentioned earlier, with the professor, they actually are able to track down the killer by a very specific type of insect, which is the corpse fly. The corpse fly is typically, well, I guess found with corpses. When I looked it up after we watched the film, it's sort of fabricated a bit in the movie.
Yeah, it's the great sarcophagus fly also is what it's known as. And I guess in real life, they will go after kind of anything rotting and decaying. But in the movie, they say it's only human flesh.
Yeah, and so she has a little Jiminy Cricket moment where she has the fly and follows it, and it's like tracking the killer over miles and miles and miles. And there's like the scene where she's riding the bus with the fly in a box, and it goes crazy, and she's like, I gotta get off at this stop.
Yeah.
The fly is pointing me in the right direction.
Yep.
So that's, it's like Tinkerbell or whatever.
Yeah. Yep. I believe.
Yep. But then she kind of jumps ahead of what her and the professor had planned, and then goes in alone. So that catches up to when all the, you know, Friday the 13th-y stuff happens. She stumbles across the house.
Well, technically that was the abandoned house.
Oh,
or that
right.
was the house where the boy had first been chained up, but then after that she goes and finds Donald Pleasance dead, and then the police, and then... Anyway, you should just watch it. I feel like our discussion has been all over the place. The movie jumps all over the place.
It does, yes.
But it's absolutely worth a watch. It's weird. I like it because it's so weird.
Yeah, I like it too. It is fun, and it does have moments where it kind of trails off, kind of like I am right now. I'm doing it right now. No, yeah, Phenomena is a lot of fun. If you get a hold of the Blu-ray, definitely watch either the international cut or the Italian version. I think it'd be a bit, I don't know, maybe they tighten it up in Creepers.
That's funny because I was
going to
say,
time.
I'm kind of curious if I would think the Creepers version is better.
Yeah.
Sometimes less is more. I have that issue with a lot of films.
Yeah, we'll have to check it out sometime, and you know, later on down the road, watch the Creepers edition. But
we will update you if we do.
Yes, exactly. So that's 1985's Phenomena.
And that is a brief discussion of No Body, No Murder.
Yeah, no, I think it's that's a great,
which
way
is
to
no longer
together.
The law. So don't think that if there's no body, you won't get caught.
Yeah.
Don't listen to me.
No. Yeah, don't do that.
All right.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for joining us for this mini episode. It was fun to talk about Dario Argento a bit. Don't get to talk about him all that often. He's got a great filmography, and you should look him up and see all of his films. So this has been a mini-sode of Based on a True Crime, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Death is but a door.
Time is but a window.
We'll be back.